20 minutes for discussion, so and then we'll continue our discussion at the reception. So do people have questions?
As one who has spent a lifetime in environmental work, I congratulate you on your enthusiasm for the talk.
Thank you.
I would urge you to think a little bit more historically with respect to the desertification of the near Middle East and North Africa, looking at what happened. Mm-hmm. There are too many goats, too many people.
Too many goats and too many people. So, I mean, can you say a little more about that in terms of how we can think about what the problem is or what kind of narrative you're constructing?
Well, the problem is you people have to sustain themselves in some fashion. Mm-hmm. The kind of government, I don't know what kind of governments existed in pre-Roman times in North Africa. We know quite a bit about what existed in the Near East and the Middle East. Mm-hmm. These people had to survive. Mm-hmm. In surviving, of course, they rose in the land. Mm-hmm. And it's remarkable now how this is being reversed to some degree, particularly Israel. But is this the normal way that
Yeah, I'm not going to try to figure out if it's the normal way that things happen, but I think what's really helpful to me in your comment is the importance of saying, on the one hand, and I've stressed the point perhaps more than I needed to, that the West is not the source of environmental wisdom. But I think the danger that I didn't address at all, but is obvious, is going too far the other way, right? And romanticizing the capacity of indigenous peoples, native peoples, people outside the West to be custodians of nature. And certainly, you know, I could spend another, you know, half an hour talking about that problem. So I think it's helpful to have had that thrown in there. But by no means am I suggesting the reverse, right? You know, just as with Benjamin, a narrative of decline is not necessarily superior to a narrative of progress. A narrative of idealizing the third world is not going to help us any more than a narrative of idealizing the first world. So thank you very much for that.
In the case of Nigeria, there seems to be an obvious clash of ideals between the locals and the desires of the oil companies. And I'm wondering if footprint chart and where did this idea of nature as like a monetary value emerge? You know?
Where did it emerge?
Yeah. You know, why does it seem like people can pay off the fact that they're destroying the grass, destroying the plants? Why is it paid off with a capitalist system that might not parallel out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the answer that is easiest to go to is that it's a fundamentally capitalist idea of recognizing use value, so recognizing only use value in nature, right, and not any other kind of benefit for its own sake, for other kinds of human needs. So I think that's the easy answer, and maybe I'm not sure I have a better answer. But I think that you put your finger on something important in terms of the question of where to go from here, in terms of the question of whether in reversing the externalization of nature and capitalism, where all that matters is questions of profit, and we can put off questions of nature and questions of harm to the environment, and you know, we can go other places for resources once they're worn out. If we're going to stop doing that, right? If we've reached a limit for example, with climate change, where that externalization cannot happen so much anymore. I think that's the, you put your finger on the debate. Do we get out of it by increasing the monetary value of those environmental services, or by working against that whole idea of nature only having any kind of worth through its monetary value? Does that make sense?
Let's follow up on Jen's question. Can you talk a bit about the kind of role of literature or photography in this? Because it seems like in the kind of narratives you're sketching out here, you're talking about the limitations, right? In terms of reducing energy use value, you know, all the kind of various narratives of the environment, but are there ways that certain types of aesthetic forms can recuperate another narrative that maybe more of the capitalism will not be able to?
Yeah, and as someone who works mostly with narrative, I was completely unprepared for the effect of the photographs on my students, but both completely unprepared in terms of the shock, right? At the depth of my students' response, but also in terms of having the methodological language to talk critically about the image in a way that would allow students to step back from their visceral response to think about the role of affect. And so it was at this moment, and I don't have a great answer for this, and I think for me, I can think more abstractly about narrative and how it works than I can about the image. And to be honest, there is a part of me that's concerned and suspicious about offering the image or narrative as literary narrative as a kind of representation or text that is going to allow students to break the blockage of this and to begin to think about questions of nature and money and value. And for me, the analogy is kind of like trauma studies in the 80s and 90s, where there was this argument that reading a text of trauma somehow created in the reader an experience that was like trauma, so that the reader could understand what it was like to experience a historical trauma. And that makes me really nervous. So what makes me nervous about photographs in narrative is the disconnect, possible disconnect, between pleasure, these images are beautiful. Mm-hmm. And what